Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Voice Notes from the Lab with me, Jack. How have we not got this down yet?
I don't know, I just never expect you to come to me.
Always.
Hi, I'm Rosie.
Always you second. And me, the other Jack. Hey.
Hey guys. How are we doing today?
Fab.
Fab?
Yeah.
Cool.
Why not?
We should probably reference the fact this is our fifth episode, but this is the first episode that we are recording to video.
Yes.
Through our good friend Simon. So yeah, expect to see our faces as well as hearing our voices, which is pretty exciting. Or not. Or the opposite.
But anyway,
I thought I'd just get that out of the way, you know.
Address the camera in the room.
Yeah, the camera in the room. Get that out of the way. We don't need to reference it again. I'm going to try my best to forget.
Cool.
But I'm conscious of how I'm sitting. I'm like, oh, I just lounge in here. Anyway.
Sometimes when we chat, I like to just like move my nose ring or like, you know, just scratch my beard. And now I feel like I can't do any of that.
You can still do it. Let's just forget that they're there. We're all very not used to being on camera.
Yeah.
Although Rose is a bit of a pro. Semi-pro, let's say. Amateur.
Every picture we take is of you.
Yeah, yeah.
Ever. You are a natural.
I'm a model for two people.
Yeah. It's better than being a model for no people.
That's true. Yeah. Sad times.
Maybe.
How's your week been, Rosie? What have you been up to? Or 2 weeks since episode 4, where we talked non-stop about gear for about an hour and a half.
Gear.
What have I done?
What have you been doing?
Moved house.
You did move house. That's exciting.
It is fun.
Back in South Bristol, where the cool kids are.
Place to be.
Big time.
Yeah.
Mm.
That went well.
And the van's in for a service, so hopefully I can go camping soon.
Excellent.
Not service, an MOT, so it's riskier.
Yeah.
It's riskier.
Could be legally not sound anymore.
They might steal it from me. Brilliant.
It'll be fine. Everything will be fine. And we can do... We can record a podcast from the back of it on the road at some point. In fact, both of your vans, you've both got vans.
And mine just passed the MOT, not to brag.
Yeah.
But we got through. So
perfect.
We've at least got one.
Yeah.
All right, but not purple one.
That's true.
We can definitely do road trips in the van and record podcasts in the back of the van.
Fab.
How's your week?
Your
been?
Week?
Ooh! You go first.
No, go on you.
Okay.
Yeah,
nice. My 2 weeks have been nice. Obviously, I took a couple of days off. That was lovely.
We know.
That was before the stressful. Last episode.
Yeah, we've already
referenced that. Yeah. We don't need to talk about my time
still
off
scarring,
anymore.
Though, wasn't it?
I feel like I've not done much, really, in the last couple of weeks since the last episode. We've just worked. The lab's got a lot busier, hasn't it?
Yes.
We're much busier in the lab. Clocks have gone forward.
They have.
That sun's out.
Days are longer. The sun's out. Guns out.
Yeah.
Cameras out.
All the iron I've been pumping.
All that iron that you pump. Yeah. We've been pretty busy, haven't we? Probably, I don't think I've shot much at all, really. Although, big news, guys. I mean, it's not big news for you two because I've already spoken to you about it.
Oh,
but
fine.
Big news for our listeners. The Fuji X100V that I considered selling and the Fuji GA645 that I considered selling that were both in a bit of a playoff final.
One of them was going to go.
Not both of them.
Dun, yeah. dun, dun.
So what's the deal?
I'm keeping them both.
Yeah, cool.
They're excellent. I love them. I'm not getting rid of anything. Because I was like, well, I don't have anything specific that I... Like, something else that I want to buy.
Yeah.
So what's the point of selling a perfectly good camera? Even if I don't use it that much, it's fine if I don't use it that much. Because I've got a whole bunch of cameras. I can't use them all of the time.
Unless you get those fun holsters that wedding photographers use.
Oh, yeah.
That is true.
You can just have three on your body.
Well. Yeah. And then, like, one of those hard hats that usually you can have, like, a beer can either side. But I could have a camera with a shutter release cable
only
on each side.
It's those
that would be cool.
Ricoh 360 ones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just saying we should really get one.
I mean, this is the first time you've talked about getting a 360 camera.
If anyone wants to donate one. To
yeah.
the cause.
We don't need it now.
We don't. Because we've
Why
got
don't?
These.
That's not referen- we're not referencing them again.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I keep forgetting.
Well, just in case, you know, anyone wants to take one on their travels to the south of France at end of July, please donate through our Patreon that we don't have. We've got Dropbox, find it.
Brilliant. Just set up a... Maybe the video that we are recording for this doesn't go on YouTube. Maybe it goes on OnlyFans.
Yeah.
And we just... And people can just, you know, pay to see us.
Yeah, there's clothed. Probably other services we can use other than OnlyFans.
I mean, that's...
And, you know,
yeah.
Keeping things behind paywalls is probably...
Yeah, it's not the route we want to go down.
No, this is a gift.
This is a gift.
But we will still, you know, you can send your film into the lab.
Yeah.
What else have I... Yeah, that, I mean, I guess that's my biggest news, really. I've decided to keep both the cameras that I was probably going to sell, and now I'm not.
Yes, but it's because you shot them. But we're missing that part out. Since our last... We went on a photo walk since our last...
We went on that night walk, which was cool. Yeah. It was good fun.
And you shot the GA.
And I think I spoke about this at the time. I don't necessarily enjoy the process of using that camera. It's a weird camera to use. I suppose because it's pretty automatic, and you're looking through an optical viewfinder rather than an electric one, and you're not looking through the lens either. So there's no mirror involved. You're just looking through a magnified hole,
like a point and shoot.
Like a point and shoot. Which is what it is. But actually, I love the results from it.
Yeah, because they're stunning.
Yeah.
Just it's a point and shoot. You love your point and shoot, so it's just a different format point and shoot. And just treat it like that. Take it out when you want.
And then you and I went for a little wander around Cottam one morning as a bit of a test run for a future photo walk that we've got coming up soon, hopefully. Lovely sunny morning, and I took my digital Fuji out.
And you loved it.
I had a lovely time.
There we go.
So
now they stay.
That's all I need to... I just need to be reminded anytime I'm like, I think I'm going to get rid of this. You're like, okay, just take it out, go and shoot it, and you'll love it again.
Yeah. Maybe that's your brain saying, use this camera, rather than get rid of this camera.
Oh, maybe it is.
Yeah, like you're interpreting that as like a, I never use it, so I'm going to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Whereas you should be going, oh, wait, no, I'm using that. That's what I'm shooting today.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, just... Change that.
Our brains do funny things.
Yeah, CBT is what you need.
CBT?
Cognitive behavioural therapy.
Oh, right. I was like, not my like compulsory basic training for riding a motorbike.
That as well.
Okay, cool.
But, you know, you just retrain your thought process to go, oh, no, I just want to shoot that camera.
I feel like I'm mixing up cognitive behavioural therapy with, like, electroshock therapy.
It's definitely.
That is different, isn't it? I don't need that.
Yes.
Completely different.
Completely different.
We're not going to put you in the electric chair.
Imagine it was like, oh, guys, I think I'm going to sell this camera. Okay, all right, I won't, all right.
We probably set something up, but...
Yeah, that's
those, like a fly swatter.
Those, like, TENS machines, whatever they're called.
Yeah.
Every time.
Esther's probably still got one upstairs for when she was pregnant.
Yeah, too, right.
Let's get one of them on.
Yeah. Is it remote controlled by a phone? We can just...
She had a remote control for it.
Cool.
Yeah, I think it was, like, wired. So you can't have it.
Well, I can.
Well, get a longer one.
Maybe episode 10's podcast.
Oh.
We're all hooked up.
Yeah. It's just going to be... I swear they've done that on game shows.
Probably. Yeah, it sounds
horrific.
You get
stuff wrong and just... shot. Did you ever used to... you know, like with the lighters, did you ever used to take those little bits out of the lighter and just, like, electric shot your friends?
No.
We did that all the time in school.
Terrible.
Yeah, you just like you take the bit out that you know, not the ones that you like with the wheel that
it's the clicky ones,
but like the clicky ones. Yeah. It's got a little battery in there. Yeah, you just take them apart, take that little bit out, just go up to your friends and just go click, and he's like, bam.
I guess that's probably a mini taser, right?
Yeah, probably. It was a bit like licking batteries at school. You know?
You went to a weird school. I'm sure we spoke about this before. We should probably not drag in licking batteries into like every episode we do.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't condone or advise.
I'm sure we have. If not, it was just at the lab. Either way, we've spoke about licking batteries.
It's fine. It's not going to do you any harm. Square battery. It's just a bit fizzy. Okay, enough of licking batteries.
Stop licking batteries.
So this episode was. The focus
my
of this
my
episode.
Week was good, thanks.
Oh, sorry, I'm so sorry. Well, the thing is that it's that I asked you it's already, right. So my brain's going. You asked that question
also,
already, and then you
threw
it back
on me.
How was your week, Jack?
Nah, I'm not joking.
No, come on, what did you do?
I didn't do anything. That's the thing.
That's a lie.
What did I do? I did the same thing as you.
That's a lie.
Yeah,
the exact same thing as mine.
You had week 3 of your experimental dark room course.
And week 4.
Yeah.
And week 4. Oh shit, really?
Was week 4.
So what did that entail?
Last night was my favourite one.
Was it?
Yeah, we used Molly. Tim's ultra-large format camera.
Cool.
Called Molly.
Called Molly.
Yeah.
20 by 24 inch negatives.
Insane.
Yeah.
On paper?
No.
On negatives?
On film.
On film?
Yes.
How is a film that big?
You can buy it.
Shit.
Well, so Ilford, I think once a year, for about a week, open... I don't know. I guess they open a form where you can essentially order film in... completely unconventional sizes. Oh, okay. So that's actually happening this week, I think.
Right.
But like a 25 for Tim's massive camera, a 25 pack of HP5 is like 700 quid.
Jesus. Yeah. A 10 pack?
25.
20. Oh, that's fine.
For was 700 quid. Oh, yeah. That's what I said when he told me yesterday. I was like, a 10 pack? And he was like, no, 25. I was like, oh, yeah, that's doable.
Yeah.
My math's terrible. I'd hate to work out how much that is a sheet. But yeah, go on, have a little look.
Do it.
Was it HP5 that you shot?
No, so he bought, I think years ago, from...
Oh, that's reasonable.
What is it?
£28 a shot.
That is actually quite reasonable, to be fair.
A pound an inch.
Yeah, yeah.
That's insane. Stop. But
I want to leave.
I'm out. I think there's going to be a point in every episode where you go, I want to leave.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't want to be.
That's going to be your catchphrase.
Yeah.
Just start calling it the buzzer pad.
Yeah, we'll get eventually this
we're
podcast.
Both to it.
No, eventually this podcast will get so big that we'll all have like Mattel toys of us, and you'll pull the string out the back of Rosie, and you'll go, I don't want to be here.
That's quite sad.
That's your impression of me. But for the lab, it's just, I quit.
Yeah. Oh, don't do that.
Mine would just be throwing a strop. I'd just be throwing a strop every time you pull it.
Yeah, I don't like this developer.
Yeah.
Oh, why are we doing this? Oh, what's the point of that?
That's me being me.
What even is this black and white film? No one's put a label on it.
Yes,
oh, no one exactly. else wants to do black and white. I guess I'll do it.
Yes. Well, all right, calm down, guys. It's not going too hard.
Anyway, if you're sending black and white film into the lab and it doesn't have a label on it,
I'll just debit for whatever I want.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't come out,
well, we'll email you first and...
sure.
Yes.
There is a process.
Yeah.
Carry on, please.
Back to Tim's film. He bought a load quite a few years ago from someone on eBay. And I think it was... I don't know if it was cheap, but it was considerably cheaper than the £700 for 25 sheets. But he has, like, a ton of it. So
amazing.
We're shooting... Well, we got to shoot that. I had a little... I say little. I had a massive portrait of myself.
20 by 24.
20 by 24, and the lens he used was just my face. It's like my face, but fucking huge. It's like the size of my body. It's cool. It's real cool.
That's insane.
Beats has just come to say hello.
Dog's just walked into the
hello,
room.
Hello, bird.
Rammed the mic.
Stop kicking knocking things because you want to get up there.
He's gonna want to get up now.
You want to get up there?
Stomping his feet.
Gonna have to lift the dog up on the sofa mid podcast.
Yeah, Jack's. Yeah. Well, you might have a visual of this, so I don't need to tell you. But Jack's now lifting.
Come on, mate.
The dog up, trying anyway.
Because he's too old and too big.
Sit down, settle down, don't snore, and you eat.
Yes. Yeah. Brilliant. But that's it for me. I think we should get into the podcast because I just chat shit for the next 45 minutes.
Well, no, I mean that's it's such
well,
a valuable.
That part was fun.
Such a valuable part of our podcast, and you know,
it is.
Talking about what we've been up to.
Yeah, absolutely.
So our focus for this week's podcast, probably again similar to the last episode, is probably a bit of a juicy one. Again, a little bit like therapy, but wanted to talk a bit about imposter syndrome and how I guess our own experiences with it. But also how I don't feel like people talk about it all that much. So I guess there's, you know, kind of an element of normalizing it, and I think it's something that every photographer, but also every creative feels.
Yeah.
Is that something either of you have had sort of any experiences with, Rosie? Or Jack. I just thought I'd pick one of you so that you're not both like
fuck it out.
Fighting to put your stories across. Okay, Jack, how about you?
All right. Jeez. Yeah, always.
Especially, okay, let's put some context into it. You don't have a sort of a working background in photography. It's been very much a hobby for you previously.
Yes.
But you're now kind of in a process of trying to establish yourself as a working photographer, right?
Yeah, kinda.
So I feel like, having been through that myself, there must be an element of imposter syndrome, or at least, you know, what's your mind doing?
Yeah, it's hard. Like, 'cause I think in general, like, in from a work point of view, I'm not overly hard on myself, but then that's just different, because I think that's just, I'm predominantly at the lab at the minute, and that, well,
you are.
Forever.
Yeah.
But that's kind of, you know, I don't know if we've been to this before on the podcast, but, you know, I moved from just a job working in the head office for a restaurant, took the plunge and worked in a family studio, which really helped, like, get an understanding of, like, the industry as such, but just a part of it. But also I learned a lot about lighting and stuff. And then I moved over and to the lab pretty much full time, and sort of thought, yeah, I'm going to have a go at doing some freelance stuff and kind of shooting what I want to shoot. But I enjoy the lab enough. You know, I say enough, that sounds terrible. Yeah, no, right. But I enjoy the lab. I just don't want your head to be like, but I enjoy the lab so much that, like, I'm actually super happy to be there rather than going, I'm missing out on this photography work.
Yeah.
It's sort of secondary to that. So that sort of little story was more just to say, like, at the minute, because I'm not doing a hell of a lot of photography work.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not that affected by that. But even when I am doing it, I think the difference is what I'm trying to say is, but I can justify that.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, I've shot a wedding. I liked the outcome of it,
mm-hmm.
but I thought I could have done a better job.
Yeah.
But I was actually quite good at justifying that one, because I've gone, well, I've never shot a wedding before.
Sure.
The lighting was out of my control. I unfortunately wasn't able to see the venue beforehand. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of factors that I sort of allowed myself to downplay that imposter syndrome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I do get it in personal work, massively. I mean, but even just from the offset, it's like, I never have a project. Why don't I have a project?
Yeah. You
know, there's people that can just pull a project out of their ass. Not at all.
Seemingly.
But it's seemingly, yeah, that's the thing, right? Yeah. And I think, like, I understand that, but my brain can't rationalise it. And that's where it comes in. Sure. And I think, you know, it's I know a lot about film, but sometimes I'm just like, man, you need to understand that better. And it's like shooting a certain camera, or I see someone, maybe there's something I've tried to do and I see someone do that really well.
Mm.
And I think, you know, I think a big thing for me is imposter syndrome, yes, but because you can compare to people really easily now, I think my big thing is like imposter syndrome, going, I'm not doing a great job at that, or I could be doing this way better. And then I see someone absolutely smashing out of the ballpark. I have no context. They could have been doing it for 20 years. They could have been doing it for a year. You know, it's just you see these things and I'm like, I do not compare to these people.
And when you say you can compare yourself to people, you mean, like, because we're seeing these days, we're seeing everything,
yes,
or what we think, what people want to present of themselves on social media.
Yeah.
So really what you're, you know, and I think, yeah, social media is kind of great for that, but it's also quite damaging in that respect,
because
for the most part, you're seeing only the best of what people present, or specifically only what they want to present to the outside world, which makes you go, fuck, are they this good all of the time?
Yeah.
Of course they're not.
Yeah. I mean, it's strange. So I think, I think because we see a lot of it, you know, now more than ever, and we see what people want you to see, if you said, whereas I see my own work, the good, the bad and the ugly, you know, I see the stuff that's absolute dog shit, but I still judge myself on that.
Yeah.
Whereas I see someone else's work, they're not going to show me the stuff they're not happy with. So it's hard. But yeah, I think for me, like, my imposter syndrome, and it is bad at times, and sometimes I'm just like, what's the point? Like, why do I even bother with this? But it definitely comes from, I think it comes from my personal work, because it's almost like immeasurable. Is that the right word? Like, it's not, I can't measure my personal work projects and stuff off of something else. Whereas I think my brain's quite good at going, that gets good results. You know, if I started actually putting myself out there and people were hiring me, I would still go into this going, fuck me, I could have done a better job of that. But yeah. I do think that the more I send a portfolio to someone and the more I get hired, the more I'd be like, I can do this. And I'm actually not bad at what I do. Like, I'm always going to compare myself to people in that sense. Yeah. But
it's interesting you think that. And not to say that you're wrong.
Yeah.
And so, like, I would agree with you generally. No. I would agree with you completely. But, like, in my experiences, I feel like that's not really been the case. I can be hired over and over and over again. And I have been. And I don't think that's... Maybe it has, slowly but surely, but I don't necessarily think that that's affected in my imposter syndrome all that much. I mean, I suppose it does because I go, hey, I mean, if people are willing to pay me to go and do this, then I must be doing something right.
Yeah.
But I still, on most jobs, feel like, how am I getting away with this?
Yeah.
Like, how long can I get away with this for?
Yeah, yeah, like, absolutely. And I'm probably like that to an extent. But, you know, let us not beat around the bush. It's not like I've got work flooding in. But then I'm just putting that down to myself. I haven't tried. I, you know, worked at the lab, worked more at the lab. And I'm comfortable, but in a good way. Not at all in a negative way. I'm happy with where I'm at. So then I sort of slowed down on chasing that. No, let's do some freelance photography. So, you know, I get the odd job coming here and there.
Mm.
But I think at the minute, because I haven't done a lot, because I haven't pushed for it, I haven't experienced that imposter syndrome. But then having said that, if I think back to the studio, when I worked in the family studio, pretty much every shoot that I'd walk out of an edit, I'd go, well, that was shit. That was absolute dog shit.
Yeah.
But people would spend the money, you know, and people would buy the work, and I would just never be happy with what I did, ever. And I didn't think that it shocked me that I was there. It shocked me that I was shooting, and it shocked me. But
is that just because of the jump?
Like, that's what I'm going to say. Part of me thinks it might just be the jump.
And that, but then, like, isn't it like you can take it further? So, like, if you're not happy, then you just take it to the next one.
Yeah, but, like, I think, you know, I think it's just, I think there was a little bit of an element of, like, I'm doing the best I can here. Obviously, new to it.
Yeah.
And they trained me to it. But I mean, that's my only experience of like, in photography. Because as you said, like, I've only done it as a hobby, like, as in from a work point of view, from a hobby point of view, as I said, I just compare myself to everyone always.
Mm.
But yeah, I don't know. It's hard.
I mean, it's hard. I mean, going back to something you said about, you know, when we're talking about social media and people presenting kind of only their best work, or only work that they want us to see. Am I right in saying you guys with Girls Camera Club, you had a bit of a project where you, correct me if I'm getting this wrong, you shot a whole roll of film, and the point of it was to present everything and show everything rather than just your best bits?
That was a plan.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
It's not been fulfilled.
Okay,
yeah, necessarily.
Cool. But I think that was
something Alice wanted to do for sure, like, especially with the funding that we've got now as well, was to, like, shoot a whole roll.
Yeah.
And then instead of, like, choosing selects that are, like, your favourites, just present the entire thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, that is, for me, like, I think that's a fantastic idea, because it's, you're putting yourself out there, and I think there's so much work that you can produce that you don't value, but it has value, and it might be that other people are able to find things and point things out to you in your own work that you haven't really seen, haven't really noticed.
Yeah, big time.
And that's super valuable. And you know, and I guess in the same way, like, you know, we have, like, we don't, but, you know, other people have, like, crit clubs, and presumably when you studied photography at university, that was probably, did you do, like, a lot of kind of, like, group crit work and stuff like that, where you were all kind of not aggressively pulling people's work apart, but, you know, sitting down and going through stuff like that?
Yeah, like, every week you'd sign up to one crit where you could either, like, there were group ones. I'm trying to, like, remember now. There were a few, like, group ones. And then also you'd do, like, one-on-ones where I would just effectively go in there with my sketchbook and be like,
yeah,
this is what I got.
Does that process, do you think, make you feel more confident about the work that you're producing?
Yeah, feedback always makes you...
I guess, yeah, at the very least... validates
the work.
Yeah, I guess it does. I guess at the very least, you're either being told that it's good and therefore validation, or you're being given...
Things to work on.
Things to work on, which is focus.
And, your next shoot is you take that through and then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think all of us, every single person within a creative industry... Whether you work in a creative industry or not, or whether you're just a photographer, on an amateur basis or whatever creative practice that you do, there's going to be an element of feeling like everyone's better than you, or not even everyone's better than you, but that. I mean, I think it comes down to working in the industry. Specifically, because I link it very much with money.
Yeah.
And I remember started out working in the TV industry, and that's for the most part, or at the time anyway, pretty good money. And I was just working with like I am now with you guys, working with mates and friends and having a ridiculously fun time a lot of the time. It's still hard work. Anyone who does it, it's still hard work. And often you work long days or long nights, and there's a good amount of stress and pressure involved with it all. But I think it's interesting how much imposter syndrome is linked also with how we perceive money, or how we perceive how we earn our money and how hard that work is, because I mean, is earning money, especially good money, is that only legitimized by working hard? But what is working hard? Is working hard not enjoying it, or you can enjoy working hard still, can't you?
Yeah, I think there's a, like the phrase working hard, I think there's a weird, I mean, it definitely in my head, but not like, like the phrase working hard seems like, always makes me think of like manual labor, or like you're stressed throughout your entire day. Like it's just nonstop. Whereas like, it's not, it's about how productive you are and what you get done and when you get it done. And yeah. I think, you can have a laugh and a joke with your friends at work and still work hard. Yeah. You can still get everything done. And I think as long as you're meeting your deadlines, if you've got them, or whatever it is, your targets, whatever it may be, working hard doesn't have to look like stressful and shitty. It doesn't have to be. I think some people perceive it differently. So like I said, sometimes when I think about working hard, it's like, oh yeah, how am I not knackered from my day, or how am I not, but actually if we've done what we needed, at the lab, if we've done what we needed to do for that day, we smashed out this and that and whatever else, we've got the job done. We've worked hard in the day.
Because it's all relative to the industry. Because it's all relative. We all work hard at the lab. Some days are a bit more chill than others. And so some days we can take our foot off the pedal a little bit, but the work's not of any less quality.
No.
We just have a little bit less to do.
Yeah.
And some days are full on, and we're pushed to the limit, and it's a bit more, there's more pressure, and we really have to like work solidly to get everything out that we need to get out that day.
Yeah. That's just a hard working day rather than working hard. Like
That's interesting. So is there a difference there, do you think?
Yeah, I think again, we work hard to get the job done.
Yeah.
But we might have had an easier day. But a hard day at work is like, we're rammed, we're getting everything. Do you know what I mean? But that's just my brain. I'm just perceiving that differently. I'm like, we always work hard to get shit done.
You're too much in your head about the technicalities of how you're processing that.
we always work hard regardless of what we've got in.
Yeah,
but I could go home and have a hard. I could have still been an easy day.
Okay, I see what you're saying. I see what you're
saying. That's what I'm saying.
We work hard because we put all of our effort into it all the time, but it might have been a chilled day.
Yeah.
Relatively speaking.
We still work hard to get the job done.
There's that saying, isn't there? I've written it down so I don't misquote it. But yeah, you know, do something you love and you'll never work a day in your life. Right? That's what they say. Which I understand and appreciate the sentiment behind it, but is that true?
Well, I guess the whole point of this and this topic is that that couldn't be true, but then it's the pressures that you put on yourself.
Totally, yeah.
To make it viable or success.
Yeah.
Successful.
Yeah.
I was going to say successible and I was
successible.
Like...
Successible. That's cool. I like that word.
But I think it's all perception of how, you know, it's how we're like taking in that quote, for example.
Yeah.
Like saying you'll never work a day and is it never.
I mean, it's bollocks. It's ultimately.
Well, it's bollocks, but I don't think it's about not working. I think it's about feeling like work is not work.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess it, you know, it doesn't feel as difficult, you know, like the lab. I love working with you guys on a daily basis.
Cute.
Every day. And so, but it still feels like work because we have to get work done. But I guess it's different to, you know, I've been on shoots, which is still obviously my job and work that I enjoy doing, but I've been on shoots that have been fucking shit and with people I don't necessarily enjoy working with and the client's a dick. I'm not going to name names, but, you know,
I've
been on
camera.
Plenty of those shoots and, you know, that you're just like, oh, fucking hell, like, this is shit. But I get to the end of those shoots, right? And I go, I really fucking earned my money today.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
It's days like that that I go, right, I'm glad my day rate is what it is because if it wasn't, I would want to be invoicing them more because they've made my life hellish today.
Yeah. But every other day you still earn that money.
Exactly.
This is my thing. This is what,
ideally, yeah.
But you still, as in like every other shoot, you might walk into a shoot and it's easy.
Yeah.
But you've quoted a price and you've done the job they want just because you didn't fucking hate your life after it. Do you know what I mean? It's just because it's been a plain sailing day. Like, it doesn't mean you haven't earned your money.
But you've still got the job done.
That was my point. It's about you have hard days at work, not that you're not working hard. I know it's still like, what the fuck's going on? But
No. It makes total sense. And I totally understand what you're saying. And actually, I think when we all, in this setting, we're all sitting around and we're rationalising it and we're justifying these feelings. We're going, it's okay to feel like that because actually, of course, you've still worked hard. And in an ideal world, I'd have a little Jack and a little Rosie here.
Cute.
I don't know which one's the devil or the angel. No, I do.
I do as well.
Yeah, it's fine. But, you know, on each shoot day, if I'm ever feeling like that, you know, you're both there going, it's all right, you know how to do this, of course you do, you're going to earn this money and it's going to be fine because you know what you're doing, you're going to do a good job here.
Yeah.
But I guess that's the point, isn't it? It's the imposter syndrome isn't a when you can't justify it. It's just this part of your brain that makes you feel like you're an imposter and you're not worthy of the work that you're doing, you know. Yeah. I've been on plenty of shoots and I think, like, to be honest, how much of this is going to affect how much work I get in the future, but let's say anyway, you know, I've done plenty of shoots and actually done them well. So actually it doesn't matter at all where clients have gone, we want to do this. Can you do this? And in my head I'm going, I've never done that, but yes. And it's that thing of like, don't know who said it, someone said it for the first time at some point, you know, say yes and then figure it out later. And, you know, that shoot that we did, you and I, that you assisted me on last summer, was a big shoot. And, you know, it was not only just photographing it, it was a photo-led shoot with video on the side. And production company asked me to direct it creatively and direct the video side of it as well, which wasn't something I'd ever really done, particularly alongside photographing it.
Yeah.
But I was like, yeah, okay. And I think a part of me, I think, had the production company not have had the confidence in me to ask me that.
Yeah.
If they'd have been like, is that something you can do? You know, if they'd have been a bit more like, ooh, about it, I might have been a bit like, oh, maybe not, maybe get someone else to do that bit and I'll just concentrate on photography. But actually, because, you know, I have a good relationship with them, and they were very much like, I think it'd be cool if you did this. I was like, oh, okay, they seem to think that I can do it. So if they think I can do it,
then you can do it.
I'm just going to say yes and I'll just do it.
Yeah.
But then also, if I was in your position, I was like, I know enough people. I can definitely ask enough people before this kicks off.
Yeah, and ultimately that's kind of what I did, and but also crew are so important because generally speaking they all have your back, and
you're
like,
not doing it alone.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, but I got in my head, and that's a problem. I think with creatives in general, it's so easy to get inside your own head, and you just start having all these like. I'm not a particularly anxious person, but you have all these little anxieties leading up. I still now get like, you know, some, you know, depending upon the shoot, but I still get, some butterflies and a little bit nervous sort of the night before a shoot. And I still have to, the night before I go and do a shoot, I still have this checklist that I run through number of times in my head, not only about making sure I have all the kit that I need, but just like, right, have I thought about this? Have I thought about that? Have I thought about every eventuality? And that's because I just fucking love to plan shit, because I suppose that's my way of not feeling anxious about stuff and trying to temper the imposter syndrome
I'm not anxious, I've just got a checklist.
Yeah. But then, like, I have a checklist, and then I'm just anxious about making sure that I check everything on that checklist off. But I think, you know, from a photographer point of view, obviously we can speak about it in a much more general sense with creatives, because it does exist generally in this world. But specifically as a photographer, I think it's totally, totally normal and totally, totally okay at whatever level you are to feel like, you know, to feel imposter syndrome, because ultimately you'll get over it, albeit temporarily. No. I think if you're feeling it all of the time, then maybe there's an issue.
If
you're feeling it all of the time, then maybe it's something that is wrong. But I don't know. I just think as a photographer, like producing work, and you were saying this earlier about you know, personal work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when are you ever going to be, or are you ever going to be fully satisfied and fully content with the work that you produce? And for how long?
But like ideally, at some point, you're going to go, yeah, I'm quite good at what I'm doing.
Sure.
But like, you're right. No, yeah.
I think
trying to think of an example in my head, but yeah, I mean, ideally, you get to a point where you're confident in what you're doing. Obviously, you're still going to question it. I'm not saying you're going to just rock up one day and be like, yeah, I'm sick of what I do, end of story. But ideally, there the more people. You do it, maybe something that's more specific. I don't know, but I think ideally, maybe the more you do it, the more you grow confident.
Yeah, I think you do grow confidence, but then also, like, I've never pursued working as a photographer, and like, so I just photograph for myself. But then after uni, I took a massive break from photographing, and like, I'm only just properly getting back into it, working at the lab these past 2 years, like slowly, like taking more and more.
Yeah.
And like, we go out for mornings and we do this, but then like, actually coming up with something, so say I like photographing things with more of like a arty sense than a commercial sense.
Yeah.
Like, I still struggle with being like, should dedicate some time to this and properly plan it out, and actually doing it is like the biggest thing that I find. Like, I'm like, I've got this idea, but I'd have to set it up, and I'd have to ask to maybe borrow these things, and shall I do that, and can I borrow a tripod?
Yes.
Thank you. And like, it's, that is a big hump to get over.
Is okay. Like, is that low? Is that, do you think, in like in your head, is that, do you feel like that is kind of aligned with imposter syndrome, or is that kind of more just?
I think it is, because the thing that stops me is like, who's going to want to see it? What am I actually doing it for?
Sure.
It's funny you should say that, because so the course that I'm doing with Tim, kind of the idea for me to do that was so that I could start playing around printing more, and maybe ultimately to start making prints to sell. Not necessarily from like a, this is going to be my dream job type thing, but more of a, I shoot so much. Okay, not as much as some people do, but you know, I spend all this money on film and all this equipment, but what am I doing it for? And it's not about making money from it, but part of me goes, you should get your work out there a bit more. But I, as much as I've taken the next step, which is doing this course, my imposter syndrome comes before the fact, a bit like that. It's a bit like you're saying, like, you might not pursue that idea because you think, well, who wants to see that? And it's similar to me, is like, you know, sometimes you can look at the stuff you do and go, that's shit, and you sort of shit all over your work. But actually, with like the printing side of things, for me, as much as I'm doing this course and it's fun, every step of the way I'm like, it's cool, but no one's going to buy your work, so what's the point? And like, I know it's bad, it's terrible, but like, you know, part of me just goes, why would they buy your work over someone else's? And so like, I think, yeah, it's interesting that you say sort of like, you don't even get that far. Like, it's a thought and you could do it. But then when you map it out in your head, you're already ahead of that going, you know, it's not like you've taken the plunge and then not liked it. It's just interesting to hear that side of things. So it's like you said with work, it's like you're doing it and you're going, how are they fucking paying me for this sometimes? Yeah. Like, I feel like it's interesting to see the other side of that, which is kind of like the, before you've even done it, like you've got the pre-imposter syndrome almost.
I almost think it, in reality, it doesn't really matter whether it's you're being paid for it or not. You're always going to be, I mean, if you're being paid for it, you're going, oh, I can't believe someone is actually paying me money to make this work. And when you're not being paid for it, like you said, you're having those sorts of like, what am I creating it for? But then that takes us back to things that we've said in previous episodes about, is actually, as photographers, is the enjoyment side of things, do we take that actually from the process of creating work and making work rather than the end result?
Which is, I think, what you've got to, what I need to try and remember, is that I do like the setup, I do like taking it, and then, I don't know.
But the beauty of it as well is, like, with you and, like, maybe being a bit held back by not doing it, I don't mean to just be like, just do it, it's fine, just do it. But I just mean, like, you know, at least you're the only person seeing that.
Yeah.
Like, the beauty of it is, like, if you can push yourself that extra step to borrow the equipment. It's, like, not in a bad way, but I don't care what you're borrowing the tripod for. I'm not going to go, make sure, because you borrowed my tripod, show me the results. But, like, if you want to borrow a tripod or a camera...
Yeah, at least I've got your lights at the moment.
Yeah, fine. But just at the very least, just do it for yourself. Because then at least you can kind of... You might push yourself a little bit further. I mean, you might make it worse. You might go, oh, God, But no, but in general, like, I feel like it's a... If you can just push yourself past that barrier...
I think, to be honest, you've touched upon probably one of the most important, I guess, bits of advice for any photographer, or again, anyone in, you know, doing a creative practice, is that you shouldn't be doing it for anyone other than yourself.
Yeah.
It's feeling worthy and... As a photographer and as a creative person, and if you're producing work for you, that's all you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you know, everyone is you know, I've seen plenty of interviews with, you know, big name photographers, and you know, obviously they always get these questions of, what would your advice be to an aspiring photographer? And the thing is, you know, it's cliche, but shoot.
Yeah, just
get out and shoot and shoot what you love, because you'll never make better work than shooting what you love.
Nailed it.
Such a deep episode, man.
There we go. I mean, yeah.
Share your thoughts and feelings.
How do you guys feel? I suppose it'd be interesting to hear from people how their own experiences with imposter syndrome, and whether it's, you know, personal work. We get a lot of people in the lab who have just, you know, maybe they've been shooting digital for ages and they've just started shooting film, and they feel like that they need to know everything about it, but they don't, because one of the biggest joys of shooting film, I think, which we've all discussed before, is actually learning about it.
Yeah.
And as we've also said on many occasions, the continuing to learn and continuing to expand our knowledge. You doing your experimental darkroom course, and, you know, you with Girls Camera Club, and you being this group that, you know, you set yourself sort of themes and challenges to produce stuff and push yourself out of comfort zones.
But also, like, just being at the lab, like, I know much more about film and, like, much more about specific film types because I've just seen so much of it. Like, scanning 60 people's work every day is, you see a lot of successes and failures of it. I was going to say attempts, and I was like, that just seems really shitty. Successes and failures of taking a big break after like uni and then working at the lab, like, I was a bit like, whoops. Tricked them here. But now, like, I can pretty confidently say to people, it's like, oh well, shoot it like this and you'll like it a bit better. Or if that's your style, try this and you might prefer the results.
I think that's probably always going to be our biggest bit of advice to anyone that comes in the lab who isn't feeling totally confident, or even, you know, people who have shot film for the first time or the 101st time and they've got a bad result, they've got a result that they've not expected, and there is a bit of a, you know, for me it's like, well, you know, don't give up, because the next role you shoot could be a winner. And you know, what we were talking about, like, successes are, you know, on a roll-to-roll basis. Like, if there's one photo on a roll of 36 exposure film that you love, for me, that is a major win.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can shoot rolls and rolls and rolls and not be happy with any of it.
Yeah.
You're highly unlikely to shoot rolls and rolls and love all of it. If you do, then...
this episode's not for you.
Well, I was going to say, if you do, then good on you. You'll probably hate it in a week.
Yeah.
Well, it's like going to the print swap that we did.
Yeah.
It was like, all right, I've looked through all of the files that I've had on our Dropbox ever since I've started working there. And I was like, so I'm going to go with 3 images. just 3.
Yeah, I did that.
Yes, please.
But interestingly, I think that the print swap that we did is such a valuable exercise to kind of pull you out of any sort of funk that you might be in, and to kind of quell any imposter syndrome, or not even imposter syndrome, I suppose, but like just lack of confidence in your own ability and work. Because, I'm sitting there going, like you said, what am I even going to print? Oh, maybe I'll do these and maybe I'll do these. And then you go and you look through, like, even just like back catalogues of mornings where we've been out and we've just shot around town or around Bristol or whatever, and I've gone, oh, I forgot I even took these are really cool, why have I not done anything with these, they're just sitting there. And again, it's that, it brings us back to that point you made about maybe, you know, at that moment in time I've taken those photos and I scanned my film and I'm looking at it going, I enjoyed the morning out. No one's going to want to see these.
Yeah.
And then 6 months later, I'm going, oh, this is really cool, actually. I want to show people these.
Yeah. I like this picture that I've taken, or I like a couple of these, or
absolutely. It's almost as if, you know, a bit of breathing room.
Yeah.
Behind. We're obviously in a very fortunate position with shooting film that we can shoot a roll of film and see the results within hours.
Yeah. Hours is pushing it. An hour,
yeah. But you know, that's like a fortunate position for us to be in, and we can do that. but maybe that's not very good for us.
The thing is, yes and no, but I think...
Well, that's why we've got an express service.
Yes, yeah.
Upsell.
Shout out to the express service. Yeah. But
if you're in a real rush, a one-hour service if you're in Bristol.
That's true.
I think it's interesting because I think we might have gone to this before, maybe we haven't, and I don't want to take up too much time, I suppose, talking about this side of things, but I suppose with you saying like that breathing period, that breathing time, like space, you've got some space. I'll sleep on the sofa tonight and I'll look at my negatives tomorrow.
Oh, right, okay.
That sort of thing.
We're getting into it already, but yeah.
I just, so like, I think like having that breathing space from, so if you shot it and you don't get developed for 2 weeks, you may have sort of semi-forgot your vision in terms of what you were shooting. Then you see your negs. But for us, it might be like, we shot this morning, we get in there, dev it and scan it, and we're like, oh, I don't really like how that's not how I pictured that to look. I'm not happy with that. And then you come back to it weeks, months, whatever later, and you like start to love them. It's like that detachment from, like, you're forgetting maybe what your vision was.
Yeah.
And so then when you're coming back to the months later, maybe you've forgotten actually what you were...
What you're
trying to achieve. So then you're looking at it a completely different way.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's interesting to actually, as to whether it's a benefit or not, it's tough to say because, you know, if you get developed in 2 weeks' time, you still might have that rough vision. Like, oh, I remember I went and did this specific shoot. So I don't necessarily think it's a downfall of us being able to do that.
Sure.
I'm not saying it's a benefit, but that actually also... that time in general, like post... not post shooting, but post getting them scanned, dev and scanned or whatever, and then coming back to a month later.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's probably just the most beneficial part of that.
And that brings us probably back to the same idea of sharing your work regardless of kind of how you feel about it, because you show your work to other people and they are free of any context.
Yeah.
They have the freedom to look at that photo for what it is. They are free to look at that photo for exactly what it is in front of them without any idea of the intent behind it.
Yeah.
You know, you might have tried to create a completely different photo, but you've ended up with this, and so immediately in your head you're like, I almost don't care what it looks like. It doesn't look like what I imagined it would look like, and therefore I hate it.
Yeah.
But then like you said, you can go back in 6 months' time to it, forget that you've taken it, and go, oh yeah, that's actually really good. Yeah. Or someone else can be like, no, actually I really like this because of X, Y, and Z. And it can make you, I think, other people's, which is interesting, we're getting to a completely other like psychological territory of stuff, but other people's feelings about your work can make you feel completely different about it, which is the power that we all hold over one another, I suppose.
Indeed.
Psychologically. Anyway.
Right.
But maybe that's for another episode.
I think so.
Great. So next episode, we've not fully planned next episode, but I think what we're going to try and do is have a bit of audience participation.
Breaking the fourth wall.
Lovely. We're gonna probably do a bit of a Q&A episode actually, because we've had some lovely emails in from people who've listened to the podcast, which has been really nice. You know, really nice feedback from people listening to, you know, one person who listened to Rosie to talk about her new Mamiya Universal that she bought. Guy came into the lab, said I think for the first time, we'd not met him before. He was using the lab for the first time, but he'd listened to the last podcast episode, and he'd fetched his old Mamiya Universal out from his loft. Yeah, and
or A69.
Yeah.
Don't know which one. Yeah.
Love it.
And start shooting it.
Which is so cool.
Yeah.
It's really cool. So yeah, I think generally all of your feedback is always so, so welcome, whether it's good or bad. I mean, be nice about it.
Hold back if it is bad. Don't go in hard, but do let us know some cons.
Yeah, any constructive feedback is always welcome, let's say.
Yes, constructive.
It's also just, really, really nice to hear your stories. about everything that we talk about. But yeah, the next episode, we're going to do a Q&A, a bit of an Ask Me Anything. I guess, you know, probably focus on photography-related stuff. Or lab-related stuff, whatever you want, ask us anything, and we will pick out some of our favourites and answer those.
Big time.
Big time.
Happy days.
Cool.
Nice.
Sweet. Well, thanks to everyone for listening to episode 5. We will be back in 2 weeks' time with episode 6.
Episode 6.
I feel like you had something else to add there, Jack.
No, I said thank you.
Oh, that's nice.
That's it. I just thanked.
Okay.
I'm thankful.
I'm thankful also.
Yeah.
Rosie.
Nailed it.
Let's say.
Legends.
All right.
Thanks, everyone.
See you in a couple of weeks.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
This has been Voice Notes from the Lab, from the folk who develop your film at Jack's Lab. For those who don't know us, we're an independent photographic film processing lab in the heart of Bristol. You can find out more details about the lab, including prices and our processes, at jackslab.co. Thanks again for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please leave us a review. It helps massively with reaching a wider audience and getting to know what you like and dislike about it. You can subscribe to the series via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. And don't forget to tell your friends.